I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided, a major win for parental rights, but there's still a long way to go. Plus, Washington State's high court sides with a trans council member prone to fits of nudity. And cue the gas price gaslighting. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And of course, whenever there's a little bit of common sense, a win for sanity, we have to start the show by celebrating it. I would call this a major victory out of the United States Supreme Court. Now, this is temporary. It is basically an injunction. But of course, California has a similar law to Washington State that allows schools to trans your kids and hide secrets from you and not tell you anything about it. A lower court had took the side of California. The parents who filed suit sought an emergency injunction from the United States Supreme Court, and on a 6-3 decision, they now got it, saying California can no longer hide kids' pronouns from their parents, at least for the time being, can't hide changes in their child's gender identity from parents. So they have a right, essentially, through this decision to know and control any social transition of their kids. Before I get to some of the bases for that ruling and that decision, we'll also talk about the dissent. Remember what California Governor Gavin Newsom said about this very controversial policy back in 2024?
And I just don't think teachers should be gender police. Humble point of view. And I think this issue's gotten weaponized. And our gay community's been demonized.
Okay. None of us are asking for, in fact, we don't want teachers to be gender police. That's kind of the point. We don't want teachers to say, oh, we're going to be in control of dictating and knowing and working with your kids through their gender confusion. That's sort of the point. But California policy puts teachers in control of gender policing. And that's what these parents want the United States State Supreme Court to ultimately rule is unconstitutional and violates, a whole slew of rights, freedom of religion being one of them, but violates their rights as a parent. So I mentioned the decision was 6-3. I want to read a little bit because this is just the temporary injunction to say that, hey, there's a high likelihood these parents, if this reaches SCOTUS for a full ruling, will succeed on the merits. There's also a high likelihood, one of the key things that you have to prove if you want an emergency injunction from a court is that there will be irreparable harm if you don't immediately cease this policy. And so on a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court decided, yes, that you're likely to succeed both on the merits and there will be irreparable harm. So this is the ruling from Justice Barrett. Justice Kavanaugh also joining in this. It says, on likelihood of success on the merits, we conclude that the parents who seek religious exemptions are likely to succeed on the merits of their free exercise clause claim. California's policies likely trigger strict scrutiny under that provision because they substantially interfere with the rights of parents to guide the religious development of their children. It says the parents who assert a free exercise claim have sincere religious beliefs about sex and gender, and they feel a religious obligation to raise their children in accordance with those beliefs. It also says on the irreparable harm front, the injunction here promotes child safety by guaranteeing fit parents a role in some of the most consequential decisions in their children's lives. The injunction also permits the state to shield children from unfit parents by enforcing child abuse laws and removing children from parental custody in appropriate cases. And I think that strikes at the heart of something we're dealing with right now in Washington State. You know, this idea that you can take rights away from a parent because they don't either agree with or their kids might think they won't agree with their desired gender and their gender dysphoria. And as the court rightfully points out here in this decision, if a parent poses a genuine risk to their child because they're going to abuse their child, there are laws already on the books for that. California law and every state in the nation allows for there to be some sort of intervention to protect that child. But when it comes to gender and beliefs around gender, that is not the same as physical abuse. One of the other things, and I think this foreshadows how SCOTUS is likely to rule on this case as a whole beyond the emergency junction, it says the parent applicants are likely to succeed on the merits under a straightforward application of case law. California prohibits its public schools from informing parents of their child's gender transition at school unless the child consents. The record in this case indicates that the state's non-disclosure policy applies even if parents expressly ask for information about their child's gender identification. One set of parents learned of their child's transition at school only after the child attempted suicide. Strikingly, even after this tragic event, school administrators continued to withhold information about the student's gender identification. California's non-disclosure policy thus quite obviously excludes parents from highly important decisions about their child's mental health. So in this decision granting the emergency injunction, you know, on the merits of a likelihood to succeed on the merits, and then also on irreparable harm if you don't on an emergency basis stop the policy in California, they also foreshadow how egregious they believe it is that with this policy in California, which is mimicked in states like Washington, you could have a child in such a state of mental distress that they try to kill themselves. And even then, the school continues to keep secrets from parents that are directly applicable to that child's mental state. It's insane. I want to read a little bit from the dissent in this case. The dissent here written by Kagan, but joined by Ketanji Brown Jackson. One of the things I think is very interesting about the dissent is that it doesn't, if you could put it back up, Nicole, for me, is that they don't really say that they disagree with the other six justices. They don't really hint at potentially siding with California in this case upon further review. What they do is they say that they don't think this is the appropriate time, essentially, for the court to weigh in. It says, none of this is to say that the court gets the merits here wrong. It may not, as to the plaintiff's free exercise claim or their substantive due process claim or both. It says, I have no doubt that parents have rights, even though unenumerated, concerning their children and the life choices they make. On the other side of the ledger, of course, a state has critical interests in the care and education of children. But California's policy in depriving all parents of information critical to their children's health and well-being could have crossed the constitutional line, and that would entitle the parents, at the end of the day, to relief. But they're just saying the court is more equipped to make a decision on something so important in a more formal capacity and not in this emergency junction and basis. So I wouldn't be surprised if this ultimately is decided by the Supreme Court on a 7-2, 8-1, or oh my God, maybe a 9-0 decision. Because you have two of the most liberal Supreme Court justices basically saying they're not going to grant the emergency injunction, but they're also not going to say that the parents' constitutional argument is wrong. So I think that's very, very significant. So for the time being, this is a big win. And of course, states like Washington and parents in places like Washington are watching this very closely, because it is policies just like this that have allowed the state of Washington and our public school system to essentially kidnap kids here and hide their location from their parents. Eleanor Holman is a recent case that comes to mind. We had her mother, Jody, on the show. Eleanor was in the Puyallup School District. Apparently, unbeknownst to her parents, wanted to be called Elliot. The school, without telling the parents, connected her to outside LGBTQ+ organizations that ultimately connected her to a legal team. And Eleanor has now been missing because of policies like this for 3 months. And so while even if the case out of California succeeds, you know, at the high court, which I think it's likely to do, I think time will tell what impact that could have on policies in Washington state and other states that equate physical abuse to not confirming or conforming with your child's desired gender. And so while this is happening at SCOTUS, and while this ruling is fantastic, in Washington State, Democrats are doubling down on these policies. As we speak, just yesterday, there was a hearing in Olympia on a bill that will make it easier for the state to hide your kids, as if it wasn't easy enough already. Of course, we already have, 3 years ago, Senate Bill 5599 passed, and we called it state-sanctioned kidnapping of kids. And it said your child can run away from home and show up at a state, you know, facility, shelter, and say, my parents don't support my desired gender. And the state, by law, doesn't have to tell you where your child is, even if there's no proof of physical abuse. And that, 5599, is a case that's a challenge to that currently working its way through the system. And it's very likely the United States Supreme Court hears that. So while that is being challenged, what are Democrats in Washington State doing? They're moving forward with a bill called Senate Bill 6184. And it basically adds another layer. It does just what 5599 does, but it specifically allows it for homeless youth. So let's say there's some sort of interaction between a state worker and a homeless youth out on the streets, and they're at a crisis residential center, and the homeless youth says, oh, well, you know, I'm trans or whatever it is. And so automatically, no more under this law, Senate Bill 6184, would they have to notify parents. It says, so under current law, it says immediately notify the child's parents of the child's whereabouts, physical and emotional condition, and the circumstances surrounding his or her placement. And they added this, unless a compelling reason exists not to. Okay, we're going to get to compelling reason momentarily. It says the administrator of a crisis residential center shall notify parents unless a compelling reason exists as defined under state law. So this is in, it was already passed out of the other chamber. It was before the House for a committee hearing yesterday. And State Representative Travis Couture gave an impassioned speech why he would not support it.
I can't vote for this bill because I view it as state-sponsored kidnapping of kids. Under compelling reasons in the bill, one of the compelling reasons is abuse and neglect as defined in RCW, which I'll get to in a minute. But the other one reminds me of one of my first sessions here, Senate Bill 5599, to essentially hide kids from their parents if they want to get certain health care services, including gender-affirming care and abortions. And when we're looking at gender-affirming care services under the bill, RCW 7409675, what that means is facial feminization surgeries and facial gender-affirming treatments such as tracheal shaves, hair electrolysis, and other care such as mastectomies, breast reductions, breast implants, or any other combination of gender-affirming procedures, including revisions to prior treatment when prescribed as gender-affirming treatment, may not be excluded as cosmetic. So let me get this straight. One day, my 13-year-old doesn't show up home. The government knows, and Department of Children, Youth, and Families know where my child is at, but no one will tell me. And the next time, maybe, I see my child, it's after she has a mastectomy? That's nuts. That is absolutely wrong.
Yeah, it is nuts. It's absolutely wrong. It makes no sense at all. And as Travis Couture went on to say, saying no to those kids, to those things that your child might want at the age of 13, that's called parenting.
Parents have constitutional rights, 14th Amendment rights. It is not abuse and neglect to not affirm a certain gender surgery for a 13-year-old. That's called parenting.
And I think what's so disgusting about this law is specifically about kids that are already homeless. So you already have these at-risk youth who are already homeless for whatever reason it might be. And now the state wants to make it easier for this kid who's already living on the streets to have their breasts cut off, to have a gender change surgery. And who do you think is going to pay for it? You're going to pay for it. They're going to find a way for the taxpayers of the state of Washington to pay for it. So all of this happening, first of all, the national dialogue shifting on this issue. National medical organizations shifting on this issue about gender transition for minors, right? So the conversation's totally changing. SCOTUS appears poised to overturn this California law. SCOTUS is also very likely to take up the ongoing legal challenge over Washington State's Senate Bill 5599. Despite all of that, Washington Democrats continue to say, nah, we like this. Let's keep doing this. In fact, let's go even further. Let's make it easy to not only help kids hide from loving parents, but let's make it easier for homeless kids on the street to get gender transitions as well. And so you could have a kid runs away from home, goes to a state shelter, and as Travis Couture pointed out, come back using a different name, identifying as a boy, had their breasts removed. And that's all legal in the state of Washington. It is shocking to me. It's almost, I try to wrap my mind around this because I do believe that there continue to be some sane Democrats in the Washington state legislature. Why don't you say anything? Why don't you say anything to this idea that you know to be wrong? Because every single one of you that's a parent, none of you could say that you would be okay if your child decides to run away from home and get any major surgery, anything, and then comes back 3 weeks later and they've undergone some sort of medical procedure that has substantially impacted their lives. Democrat, Republican parent, it doesn't matter. No parent would say and could be honest if I strapped you up to a lie detector that you're okay with that. But these Democrats in Olympia, many of whom are parents, want to either vote yes or say nothing and go along with their party line on bills that allow for parents' rights to be stripped so their kids can have their breasts cut off and can undergo life-changing surgeries so they can never have children again, and all of that at the age of 13. While national opinion on this issue and the medical field's opinion on this issue is changing, Washington State has lost its mind. Washington State is the most extreme state in the nation. And it's being driven by one-party control in Olympia. And you have Democrats who are either fully lost their minds and really believe in this stuff because they want to push back against Orange Man Bad or whatever it is. And you have Democrats that are too cowardly to say anything. Disgusting. Meanwhile, all of this, of course, is being driven, I think, by the Washington Education Association and teachers' unions across the country. They, for whatever reason, want to focus less on education, more on pushing radical ideologies into classrooms and into kids' minds. And there was this interesting, we got a few emails about this. We just had to share it on the show today. You guys know we have a May Day protest every year. So on its face, it's not supposed to be a big deal. It's supposed to be about worker and immigrants' rights. And I've been covering May Day protests turned riots in Seattle for like 15 years. Because you always have these, you know, far fringe crazy people who will basically usurp the larger march to cause chaos and violence. It happened for years in Seattle. It used to get very violent and there'd be all these confrontations between Antifa and police. So there's a May Day march this year. And given all the, you know, conversation around immigration enforcement, it doesn't surprise me. It's probably going to be a pretty big one because it'll be a worker and immigrant rights march. And so you'll have all these lefty groups out. So the president of the Washington Education Association put out a letter encouraging members to participate in the May Day events, but stopped short of calling for them to like walk out of class and leave school. It said over the weekend, the WEA board approved a motion to notify WEA members to join the May Day National Organizing Call on Wednesday. May Day, or International Workers' Day, is celebrated each year around the world on May 1st. Goes into the background of it. And it says, the May Day Strong Movement is a partnership among labor unions, progressive organizations, and citizens concerned about rising income inequality. And he says, the goal is to have educator walk-ins, a no shopping day, after school demonstrations, and more. WEA is not calling for a walkout on May 1st. And it says the National Education Association has endorsed the May Day Strong Plan. Okay, so he refers to that May Day Strong twice, saying that we're part of this movement. The National Education Association has endorsed it, even has a link in there to the May Day Strong thing, but says we're not calling for a walkout on May 1st. Okay, well, let's click on the link that you included in the letter that you sent to WEA members, and it takes us to the May Day Strong website. This May Day, it's workers over billionaires. May 1st, 2026, we rally, march, and plan a day of no school, no work, or no shopping. Okay. So the WEA president says, oh, no, we're not encouraging teachers to leave class. we're going to be in class. We're not calling for a walkout. And then he has a link saying we've endorsed the May Day Strong plan. The May Day Strong plan is to walk out and have no school, no work. So I feel like you are, in fact, calling for a walkout.
It's calling out sick. So you're just going to have all these kids show up to school and all these teachers that don't? Seems to me a safety issue. That seems to me...
Well, it's also kind of a messed up thing to do to parents, but they obviously don't care about parents at all. And I'm sure that they want kids to walk out. I'm sure they'll encourage kids to walk out. But for him to say, we're not encouraging a walkout, and then say, the National Union has endorsed this May Day Strong plan, and link to all those teachers to the plan, which says walk out of class. Got it. Oh, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Just insane. All right, coming up next, a few failures from the local media that we want to dive into. First, we have been telling you guys for years now to do what I did, what Nicole did, what so many members of the Undivided family have done, and take the First Mark Challenge. We all need insurance. And, you know, for functioning adults, like, look, when we were in our lower 20s, just starting off in the world, not uncommon to go out, use some handy little calculator online and figure out what the cheapest insurance you could get is. But look, we're adults now. We've worked hard for everything we have. We want to make sure it's properly protected. So for First Mark, it's really a balance of things. Obviously, price matters. And a lot of people who are looking to change their insurance, it's usually because they're trying to save a little bit of money. And First Mark Insurance can absolutely help you out with that. But they also want to make sure that you have the right insurance that's going to cover you in the event that something horrible happens, or else what's the point? So First Mark, first of all, works for you, not the insurance carriers. They analyze your current coverage, make sure you're not overpaying for the wrong coverage, which could leave you at risk for financial loss. And then they go out and search dozens of major carriers to find you the best price and coverage. And they also do the same for local businesses, too. I have First Mark at home that handles Mike and I's needs, but we also use First Mark for the business. And it's just, you know, one of the insurance we get from them is insurance in case I get sued one day, which hasn't happened yet, fingers crossed. But, you know, we need all sorts of interesting insurance. And having First Mark walk me through all of that was very helpful, because insurance is confusing. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. firstmarkinsurance.com. All right, a couple real misses from the local news media. God help me on the gas price thing. Why is the local media so dishonest about gas prices? And it has been this way for years, ever since Governor Jay Inslee pushed the Climate Commitment Act, the carbon taxes. And remember, he said, oh, it's not going to raise gas prices. And if it does, it'll just be pennies. Even though his own experts a few years earlier had said, oh, no, this will raise gas prices. It's designed to raise gas prices. And most of the media locally just parroted that. Oh, the governor says it's not going to raise gas prices. Don't worry. And then it passed and went into effect and immediately raised gas prices and continues to raise gas prices because that's what it's designed to do. Oh, no, but we got to continue the lie and continue pushing the Democrat Party platform. This is honest to God, the tweet that Cairo 7 News in Seattle, the CBS affiliate, put out yesterday. Washington gas prices are 45% higher than the national average as oil markets react to Iran strikes. And I think this was originally published at MyNorthwest.com. They published the same article. I think that's where it started. Washington gas prices are 45% higher than the national average as oil markets react to Iran strikes. Oh my gosh, I just wanted to just leap from a tall, tall building. And I was like, okay, let me give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe that's just the headline. And I clicked into the article and read it. Nope. No, offering nothing as to the fact that Washington gas prices have been 45% higher than the rest of the nation. And offering nothing to explain why. It has nothing to do with Iran, obviously. We have been dealing with this for quite some time. And as you guys know, it's because of the Climate Commitment Act. It's because of our high, high gas tax here. But nothing in there. Literally, a layperson reading that would think, oh my gosh, Washington State. What do we have a direct tie to Iran? Are we the only state in the nation that's getting oil from Iran? Only state that's impacted when it comes to oil prices? Of course, it makes no sense on its face. But this is what we're dealing with in the local news media. And sometimes I don't know if it's bias or incompetence, but there's even a little community note on X under that post with people saying, yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with this. And just in case, you won't take my word for it, one of our subscribers had taken a picture a few days ago because they were just blown away by how high the gas prices are. They posted on X, gas prices in Linwood, Washington, days before any military action against Iran, $4.89. And then again, we'll go straight to the source on this, AAA. So right now, the national average today, $3.10 a gallon in Washington. It's $4.38 a gallon. And I compared yesterday's average to the average a week ago before any strikes on Iran. And there is no sort of gigantic difference. It's virtually the same. And I'm not saying gas prices aren't going to go up because of what's happening in Iran, but they're going to go up across the country. And it's going to be at the same. We're still going to be about 45% higher than the rest of the nation. But it's going to, the difference is going to be essentially the same. It's just we're going to go up. We're starting at a much higher level. I'm trying to explain this to a five-year-old to Cairo News. We're all starting here. It's going to go up like this. We're still going to be much higher because we have all this other stuff already. Taxes, Climate Commitment Act. Does that make sense, Cairo? Nothing to do with Iran. Would it take you like 5 seconds of research or just a brain to figure that out, that it has nothing to do with Iran? But of course, that's what you're telling all your viewers. The Seattle Times dives a little deeper into the issue, but still really downplays the taxation issue as the main driver in our gas prices here. Middle East war could bring even higher gas prices to Washington. You just read that headline and it's like, oh no. No, it's going to bring higher gas prices to everyone, probably, not just Washington. And ours are going to be even higher than everyone else. It says consumers across the country have been worn down by 5 years of stubborn inflation. So it's, oh my God, I cannot handle it. So the first thing they do is tie gas prices to inflation. And I'm not saying, again, it has nothing to do with it. But inflation impacts everyone. And it's driving ours higher, but it's driving other people's higher, but ours starts off higher. It says rising fuel costs in particular have contributed to the region's rising cost of living. Gee, Seattle Times, maybe you shouldn't have endorsed every single Democratic candidate that went on to support the Climate Commitment Act and then all of a sudden act like it's such a surprise. It says there are plenty of factors that contribute to high gas prices in Washington, said James McCafferty, director of Western Washington University's Center for Economic and Business Research. That includes state fuel taxes, high labor costs, and geographic isolation. What? First of all, the first two, state fuel taxes and high labor costs, 100% agree. Geographic isolation, maybe a little bit, but I think that's a stretch. But they say nothing in there specifically about climate policies. Nothing in the Seattle Times article about the Climate Commitment Act. Now, I believe the CCA is a gas tax, but the Seattle Times has never really referred to it as such. And you really need an expert from Western Washington University to explain why gas prices here are high? You could have stopped some person on the street and they'd be like, well, our gas tax is really high. And we have that carbon tax as well. Just insane. I mean, the media just cannot help itself. Cannot help itself. One other thing on the media. So we talked about this story about the former chairman of H.D. Fowler Company, who testified in Olympia in support of the millionaires tax back at the beginning of February, and then sent out a letter on February 26th apologizing for doing that. Apparently, you know, they sell like construction materials, and customers who they sell those materials to were complaining that Jed Fowler went down there and testified in favor of a tax that will make business difficult and more expensive for all of them. And so they probably said, we're not going to buy stuff from you anymore. And so he sent out this letter apologizing, saying that he has learned a lot since he testified in support of the millionaires tax, stepped down as the chairman of H.D. Fowler Company. And so we'll see if that repairs their sales situation at H.D. Fowler. But to me, that's an important update, right? Because when this testimony happened, oh my gosh, the Democrats loved it. The media loved it. Because here's this guy, and he's like, I'm a millionaire. Tax me. I want to pay this tax. All the media loved it. Cairo 7. Taking a look at the millionaire's tax that just passed the Senate, and they quoted Jed Fowler, a business owner who supports the tax, described the move as an investment, and they included him in their video and quoted him in their story. King 5, same thing. What I think is interesting in both of these, he's like the main part of their story. It's like, oh, here's this guy. Here's a millionaire. He's not a greedy, horrible millionaire. King 5 shares a quote from Jed Fowler, investing our communities is fundamentally pro-business. Seattle Times, in their article, millionaires tax hearing brings big crowd to Olympia. It says a couple millionaires testified in support of the proposal, saying they look forward to paying the tax. And they quote Jed Fowler. How many of those news outlets, Cairo, King, Seattle Times, do you think have covered the follow-up that Jed Fowler has now apologized and said he's learned from the experience and from hearing from business owners? None of them. Because they wanted to use a useful idiot for them to say, oh, see, millionaires support this tax. Even the people we're going to tax want to pay the tax. And the media goes out there and just, oh, Jed Fowler, what a great guy, what a great guy. Not a single one of them has run a follow-up story saying, ah, he's sort of apologized and now stepped down as the chairman of the company. Dishonesty. It's like, if it's useful for the narrative, great. But oh my gosh, if it suddenly becomes unuseful for the narrative, we can't go with it. And then of course, and this one's not a surprise, the Washington State Senate Democrats put out this video of Jed Fowler testifying. And it's all over their social media, Facebook, Insta, all of this. And it's been a pretty popular post of theirs. You think they've taken that down? No, of course not. So now people who see that are going to have no context that this guy actually stepped down as the chairman of his company and apologized because he learned from people they do business with how bad this tax will actually be for business. But they're just going to keep sharing it. Because why wouldn't they? Nobody cares about truthful reporting anymore. And I don't blame the state Democrats. I'm sure if the roles were reversed, Republicans would probably do the same thing. But Jed Fowler was a useful idiot for them. He gave them the quotes they needed to sell this tax, and they're not interested in correcting the record, not at all. All right, if you want to just look somewhere else during this next segment and just listen today, I wouldn't blame you. We've got an update on the trans council member who just really loves to be naked on the internet. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. And that's really what it's all about, is making sure that in this really difficult climate for housing providers, that you have someone in your corner at a time when it probably feels like very few people are in your corner. So they're going to be able to help you on an individual basis, certainly navigate any situations that might pop up. And then they have events across the state where you can meet other landlords and talk about, you know, strategize for how you're going to try to make things better. And they go down to Olympia and push policy ideas and also push back against bad policy ideas. So rhawa.org to become a member, Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. All right. Gross. We've done a lot of stories on a trans local council member who also just happens to love posting naked pictures of themselves online and going out in public naked. Well, the state Supreme Court has ruled that that's perfectly fine. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Dun, 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 dun. Burp. All right. You guys remember Stevenson City Council member Lucy Joan Louser, armed and queer transsexual menace. Here is Lucy on Trans Day of Awareness last March protesting topless.
Unfortunately, I need you to cover yourself up or it's considered indecent exposure.
That's not true.
Why?
Nudity as a form of protest is allowed under the First Amendment.
But you cannot expose yourself like that.
People in this society tell me it's obscene to wear a skirt. So how is this any different? If it's just based on their opinion.
I mean, I can share my opinion on that. I know we're not going to agree. So I'm respecting what you're saying. I'm not going to openly argue with you. So I completely understand what you're saying.
Okay. So after that, our friend Andy No, check out his No Comment Substack. He had dug up some of Lucy's social media activities and proclivities, posting images on, what is that, Craigslist? Taking a shower at a campground, 30-year-old female, 280 pounds, 6'3", totally nude, showering at a campground, telling the people on the internet that he was a 30-year-old female. I already read their social media account, Armed Queer. Lucy Lawser, transsexual menace, likes to call Republicans Nazis. And again, more online nudity. Okay, so some citizens of Stevenson didn't like this because that video we showed you was not the first time this council member had staged some sort of like partially nude protest. So back in July, we talked about a recall effort, and then KGW did this sob story about a Stevenson city councilor protested topless for trans rights. She now faces a recall campaign. obviously he faces a recall campaign. But okay, I don't care why you're protesting topless. Is it against the law or is it not against the law? And I happen to believe that that's a perfectly legitimate reason for the people to say this person isn't fit to represent us. Like, they're out there having confrontations with police, making people uncomfortable, protesting in various stages of nudity, and also posting naked images online in what sounds an awful lot like an effort to solicit something, does it not? So anyway, this recall effort went all the way to the highest court in the state, the Washington State Supreme Court, and they have sided with Lucy. They have sided with Lucy, basically saying that the recall petition is factually and legally insufficient. So basically, in the state of Washington, you have to prove that there is a justified legal basis for a recall of an elected official. You can't just recall them because, like, oh, I don't like that they're trans, or I don't like the way they look, or anything like that. There has to be a factual legal basis. So here's what the court ruled. The recall petition is factually insufficient because it does not show Lauser intended to violate the law. Indecent exposure is any intentional, quote, open and obscene exposure likely to cause reasonable affront or alarm. Not all exposure, this is from the court, not all exposure is considered obscene. For example, the statute specifically states that breastfeeding is not considered indecent exposure. As stated in the police report, Lauser believed obscene related to the topic of sexual gratification. She did not believe her exposure violated the law because it was an act of protest, which she did not believe was obscene. Therefore, even if Lauser violated the law, and there is a strong argument she did not, it was not intentional. So first of all, I can't take a court seriously that misstates this person's gender in the official finding, but they say that, oh no, the intent from Lucy Lauser was not to violate the law. And he didn't believe he was violating the law, and this was an act of protest. Now, one of the complex parts of this has always been for me, I believe that's a man, because it is a man, right? So men can go topless. So it's sort of this challenging thing. But Lucy believes he's a woman. So in Lucy's mind, those are breasts, right?
Well, I think she has implants.
Well, yeah, you can tell from the thing, there's definitely an implant situation. But it's as complicated because if, you know, the court and Lucy really says, I'm a woman, then you are. That is indecent exposure. I'm not allowed to just walk around topless. But for me, I believe it's a man, so I actually don't think it's indecent exposure. But if we go with your definition of what your sex is, then it is. But it's clear that this is something that people find offensive. This is exposure that is obscene. And he knows what he's doing. And not only that, I really think, and I don't know if they just didn't write the recall campaign very well, but this is a council member posting fully nude images of themselves online. That should be a basis to be able to recall. Can you imagine if any politician was posting fully nude pictures front and back on Craigslist that sound an awful lot like some sort of solicitation? Saying, taking a shower at a campground, 30-year-old female, 280 pounds, 6'3", why else would you provide those particulars for people? That, how is that not a basis for a recall? So you can, let's just totally forget about the protest nudity and look at this. So maybe they can mount another recall effort based on the online images. And then, yeah, I mean, that one on the far right, I'm just going to read this. It's a little obscene, so sorry if you have children. Posted it, trans, because I think this is like OnlyFans or some sort of similar account, trans girl masturbating. Literally, you can't see it, you're welcome, but that's what he posted, a picture of himself pleasuring himself. If we can't recall this person, if we can't recall this person, then how do you recall anyone? It's just disgusting. Sorry for that. I know I have to apologize every time I show these images. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next, but also tied to Washington State and preparations for the World Cup. First, let's see. If you're thinking about moving out of the state or something, or maybe just moving to a different place, I always talk to people who are like, well, I'm not ready to move out of the state yet, but they're moving further and further east. Now it's like people are in Ellensburg commuting to Seattle, which is crazy. And I think prices and all of that, but they're trying to get away from the Seattle crazy. I met somebody who was in Ellensburg commuting to Seattle. That would be a miserable commute. But regardless of why you're looking to move, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have many, many years experience doing this in this market through all sorts of market ups and downs. And he can make sure that you get first and foremost a market analysis. So when you go to sell your home, you want to know how your home is going to perform or is likely to perform specifically in your area. So Wes will do that for you for free. And then he can talk to you about some of the other services he offers. One of the things he started doing about 10 years ago that's really improved the outcomes for his clients is taking a proactive approach to preparing listings. So over 90% of buyers on his listings use their pre-listing inspection, and it just reduces uncertainty at the end of the process, which if you've ever sold a home, you know, that's the most stressful part. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, a little national news I want to get to. This is a horrible story, not a surprise. And also not a surprise that the new Virginia governor turned out to be totally insane. Ran as a moderate, not a moderate at all, total fringe lefty. So an illegal alien from Sierra Leone murdered a woman at a bus stop in Fairfax County, Virginia. His name is Abdul Jalla. He's accused of stabbing Stephanie Minter at a bus stop. And this guy is a frequent flyer. So this is according to a local reporter, Nick Minock. He says a court record search shows that Jalla has been arrested for violent crimes in the past. But Fairfax County Commonwealth's attorney, Steve Discano, dropped the charges and let the man go free. So he's had a whole slew of previous charges. And ICE had previously lodged a detainer against him. So this is the part of sanctuary policies that really just, and I don't know what the status is in Virginia. I know when the new governor came in, she tried to unwind some of what the previous governor had done. But ICE had previously lodged a detainer against him in 2020, and ICE was granted, and he got a final order of removal by a judge who said he could be removed to any country but Sierra Leone, which is sort of interesting. So they wouldn't send him back to Sierra Leone, but they said, you know, you could basically send him back anywhere. As I mentioned, he'd had more than a dozen arrests in Virginia alone, back on the streets after nearly every occasion. So this local reporter asked Governor Abigail Spanberger, responding to concerns that this guy might end up getting released again before trial and not be removed from the country.
Right now, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is calling on Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger to notify ICE before Fairfax County officials release a man who's accused of murdering a woman at a Fairfax County bus stop. Here's part of the statement her spokesperson sent me. Quote, DHS should request a signed judicial warrant to ensure this violent criminal is deported. So right now, ICE lodges detainers. Those are notices to local jails saying, hey, we want to come pick up this individual so we can proceed with immigration consequences. It might be deportation, might be something else. But Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger is now requiring ICE to take the extra step to overcome an extra hurdle by going to a local criminal judge to get a criminal warrant. More than 40 charges against him, an arrest record of more than 30 arrests. The Fairfax County Sheriff simply could choose to hand this person over to ICE, but Spanberger is saying that ICE should get a signed judicial warrant instead.
Yeah, a guy who murdered someone at a bus stop, who's had a bunch of other criminal arrests, more than a dozen arrests in Virginia, and they want to make things difficult. Homeland Security responded and said, sanctuary governor of Virginia is fighting to protect a murderer over American citizens. This monster is responsible for fatally stabbing Stephanie Minter. ICE does not need judicial warrants to make arrests. The heroes of ICE will continue to arrest and remove criminal illegal aliens across the Commonwealth while Governor Spanberger releases them from jails into Virginia communities to commit more crimes and create more victims. And then I thought this was interesting from Bill Malusian because, you know, I think people might hear this and think, well, why wouldn't you just get a judicial warrant? Well, even if someone is in the country illegally, a judicial warrant isn't necessarily easy for them to obtain on that basis alone. So Bill Malusian says, Governor Spanberger's office tells this local reporter she won't honor an ICE detainer for an illegal alien with 30 plus prior arrests, including rape, who's accused of murdering a woman at a bus stop. She wants ICE to get a judicial warrant, which isn't possible unless there's suspicion of a federal crime. Murder, rape, etc. are largely state crimes. It's remarkable how few politicians understand how this works. A federal judicial warrant can only be signed off on by a federal federal judge if there is probable cause that a federal crime has been committed. And somebody had responded to that post from Bill and said, well, isn't coming across the border illegally a federal crime? And he said, yes, but technically there's like a statute of limitations issue when it comes to getting a federal warrant for that. So the person would have to admit, because they need like probable cause, the person would have to tell agents, oh yes, I came into the country illegally on such and such a date. And so the bar is significantly higher. And I think the argument here is like, look, this person's in the country illegally. They've already been arrested, you know, dozens of times, and now they've killed someone. So why would you not do everything you can to work with federal agents to expedite their removal from the country? I mean, after they serve whatever time they're going to serve here, of course. All right, in California, California did what Washington State could not. California voter ID petition set to be officially submitted after netting 1.3 million signatures. Wow, so they got 1.3 million signatures in California for voter ID, one of the bluest states in the nation. And we had a voter ID initiative that just didn't get enough signatures. And 1.3 million sounds like a lot, but California is much bigger than Washington State. We only need like 400,000 signatures to qualify initiatives here. But that just shows you it's overwhelmingly popular. It says a California voter ID ballot measure that gained over 1.3 million signatures is set to be submitted in all 58 counties this week, triggering five statewide rallies to promote it. It says the California voter ID initiative is a common sense and bipartisan way to restore the trust and confidence all voters should have in our election system, said a Republican California State Assemblyman who helped lead the effort. The initiative aims to verify the identity of individuals casting ballots in our elections. Like, what is the, there's nothing controversial about this, literally. Any sort of outrage is completely made up. Even in a state like California, they're like, yeah, we want voter ID. I think the last poll I saw, it was like 80% of Americans support voter ID. But like 80% of the Democratic Party doesn't. You know what I mean? It's like 80% of Americans, much of those who are Democrats, obviously, or independents, support voter ID. But then you get what? This highly ideological group of Democratic politicians and the actual Democrats who make these laws and enforce these laws totally don't match the electorate, because they won't vote for this. If you had a vote today on voter ID in the state house in Olympia, every Democrat would vote against it. Yet, do you really think every Democrat in the state doesn't support it? Of course not. So like, they really don't represent the people they serve and the population that they serve, but they get elected to office, so. All right. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was testifying in front of Congress. And on this issue, there continues to be this claim from Democrats that ICE agents are going to be standing outside polling locations, asking people for their paperwork and arresting illegals, which I think is interesting. Because you're concerned that ICE is going to arrest people at polling locations? Why would illegals be at polling locations? That's very weird. Anyway, here's Kristi Noem.
Will you rule out the deployment of ICE or CBP to polling places this November?
There are no plans to have ICE officers at our polling locations. And
I'm glad to hear that, but would you rule it out? Would you say it will not happen?
Do you plan on illegal aliens voting in our elections, Senator?
I do not. In
okay,
fact,
then
the
there
Heritage
should be no
Foundation,
need to, unless you plan on illegal
Madam
aliens
Secretary,
voting.
The Heritage.
Yeah, if you do, let us know. And then, yes, we will send ICE agents out to polling locations. It's just such a stupid line of questioning that totally tells on themselves. Why are you concerned about that? It was like when the states were refusing to give the federal government the voter data they were requesting because they were worried that that data might be used or given to ICE. Okay, why would you be concerned that voter data would be of any use to ICE? It's because you know that there's probably some illegals voting, at least. Just really quick, while we're talking about Kristi Noem, during this hearing, she did bring up, there's, of course, the Democrats won't fund DHS, and it's having a variety of impacts. And she says one of those impacts might be keeping World Cup participants and fans safe in cities like Seattle.
Our ability to provide for a safe and successful World Cup is being hindered as well. More than 100,000 dedicated DHS employees are once again being asked to work without pay for the third time in just 5 months.
Yeah, so we'll see what impact that might have on the World Cup. I'm genuinely concerned about the World Cup in Seattle because there's been no substantial effort from Seattle's new socialist mayor to really prepare for the safety aspect of that. SPD's way understaffed. And I'll be honest, can you imagine the meltdown if Department of Homeland Security agents are at the World Cup in Seattle? I mean, this is one of the biggest events, sporting events in the world, right? You're going to have people from all over the world there. But you also need law enforcement agencies to come in and assist the very short-staffed Seattle Police Department. So there's going to be mutual aid from entities like the State Patrol and other surrounding police agencies, but also from a terrorism perspective. Any event like this absolutely has the potential for terrorism, especially with what's going on in Iran. So you need federal agents to be there. Can you imagine the meltdown the lefty soccer fans are going to have if they see an agent with Department of Homeland Security or, God forbid, Border Patrol or ICE, and they're there in some sort of security capacity? And so that is absolutely going to happen. If the mayor of Seattle actually cared about truth and honesty, she would come out and say, look, I want you guys to know ahead of time that there are going to be federal agents here to prevent acts of terrorism. We've been told they're not going to, you know, enforce immigration laws, but we need them here to keep the event safe. But she's not going to do that. She'll probably virtue signal and say, we don't want federal agents in the city for the World Cup. I can definitely see that happening. All right. Coming up next, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll and comments from the live stream. First, if you are looking, this is actually getting into the time of the year where a lot of people are looking to replace their roof. It's really because it's the rainy season, and that's when you start to notice that there's leaks and stuff. So if you're interested in getting a new roof or just getting a new estimate, or maybe just an inspection, maybe you've got a leak and you're not sure if it means you need a new roof or not, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. They also do gutter insulation and repair, exterior cleaning, etc., and they have flexible financing options. So they have payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So Valentine has roofs built around everyone's budget, and just ask about their deferred payment options as well. So since 2008, Valentine Roofing has been trusted across the Puget Sound by thousands of homeowners. You can trust them too. Call 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing, for your free estimate, and tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll for our paid subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. So yesterday I asked you about military intervention in Iran and whether you support what the president has done today. The overwhelming number of you said yes. I'm kind of curious what, if anything, could change that. So I asked, could your opinion of U.S. military action in Iran change if gas prices rise too high as a result? Nicole, yes or no?
Well, no, I don't. I'm going to be less enthusiastic, maybe, because that's going to be a bummer. But all of it's a bummer, I guess. So
I would say yes, only because there is a price that's too high. Because if you look at it as what is the effect of any sort of foreign military action on the United States? So, I mean, I'm just trying to think of like when we, you know, had to transition factories during World War II to outfit, you know, and make military supplies and all this stuff. So I think there's only so much that the homeland is willing to take when it comes to a foreign war. And so I think gas prices or costs and stuff has to be part of it. So I would say, yeah, if I'm paying $10 in a gallon for gasoline, okay, I'm gonna not like it anymore.
Right. I guess, yes, if the war drags on past the 4-week, you know, cutoff that he's claim to have given it,
right?
But then, and they go up to that high, yeah, then yes, then that would definitely change my opinion.
Yeah, I think we have to say how high and for how long. Just Sensible says no, because it'll be a temporary thing and it's important, and it's for an important reason. Annette says Washington already has high gas prices, kind of immune to it, but as we pointed out earlier, they can get much higher but still be totally disproportionate to the rest of the country. Matthew Cook, if it does rise, it will be small and brief. Plenty of fuel here and from other places. Todd Welch, no, gas prices are going to rise for a temporary amount of time, and this mission was long overdue. I do see local Democrat politicians using these prices to disguise that they already high prices we pay in Washington due to their decisions. I know, isn't that so annoying? And then the media helps them. It's like, oh, gas prices are going, now they're concerned about gas prices. Oh, gas prices are so high because of Iran. Interesting. You haven't been concerned about gas prices because of your policies. It's just so freaking typical.
It's always Trump's fault.
Always Trump's fault. And the naked is to just glob onto any reason to blame him for literally anything. Pat Coldwell, not fooled. Gas might go up due to Iran. People who think gas prices might go up due to Iran are TDS. Shelley, I said no. What's happening there in the Middle East needs to happen. And our outrageous gas prices here are mostly due to our own incompetent leaders in Washington State. We'll make do. Yeah, it might get tough for a little bit. All right, let's get to subscriber comments on a big win for parents. Matthew asks, Justice Kagan, would you like to tell us when it would be a good time to address schools keeping secrets from parents? Yeah, because their argument is like, well, not at this stage. SCOTUS shouldn't be weighing in this way at this stage. Yeah, when is a good time for SCOTUS to weigh in? Alice, the state's interest in the care of the child does not trump the parent's interest. I agree. And who would say that? Like, literally, get any Democrat in front of me, and if I ask them, who has more of an interest in the well-being of a child, the state or the parent?
I don't think
any of them would say with a straight face the state.
And
but that's their policy.
Of all the crazy things in the world right now that we're debating, this might be the craziest to me.
Yeah.
The fact that they're just saying, yeah, you can't take a kid away if they're being abused.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if a baby's in a home with fentanyl.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can if they don't confirm.
Yeah. They won't like your breast cut off at 13. Crazy. Anne Klein. What parent thinks deciding it's a good idea to sterilize your bloodlines? Thinks it's a good idea to sterilize your bloodlines. Yeah, I don't know. What parent would just like throw away their ability to be a grandparent one day because their kid at 13 wants to be sterilized? Yeah. Disgusting.
One of the saddest parts too is the hormones effect on the opposite gender. I mean, we're seeing it. That's why, I mean, men who pretend to be women are murdering people, and women who pretend to be men are angry, mean, and yeah, I mean,
maybe not all of them.
A lot.
There are trans people out there who are doing their own thing and not bothering anybody, and that's fine. Like, live your life, but you have to understand the other segment of people who are dealing with this gender dysphoria. They're like ruining it for you.
Oh yeah, because that's the thing, is like the very small percentage of people that really want to live like that and do it effectively and in their own thing.
Yeah.
It's such a small percentage.
Yeah.
And we pretend like it's this gigantic portion of society.
Wild. On WEA encouraging the definitely don't walk out on May Day, Chris Lundstrom, good thing they got the anti-ICE signs up before the May Day march. Yep. Mm-hmm. Big Princess, back in my day, we had a May Day celebration at school where they had children perform a dance around a maypole. Yeah, that's what it used to be, right?
I don't even remember talking about it much. No. I don't remember anything about May Day other than, you know, being taught.
Well, maybe it was like much longer ago, but Mighty Mouse says May Day used to be so much fun, knocking on the neighbor's door and running after leaving some flowers and little cakes on the porch. Yeah, that's so wholesome. That is so wholesome. On the media blaming Washington's high gas prices on Iran, Crafty Grandma Crispy says, well, how else are they going to convince people that Trump's bad? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Media using the millionaire as a talking point but not correcting the story. Late Night with Tina, that idiot Fowler went viral, now his company will struggle. And look, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but if he wanted to go there and testify, he should have said, I am only speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for my company, I'm not speaking for our customers, but here's how I feel about it. Now, I'm not saying people wouldn't have been upset, but he definitely positioned it as, because he's the chairman of the board. Or else he at least should have gone the step of, and this is what he acknowledges in his letter, he should have talked to his customers first and learned from them the challenges that this tax will pose for them.
Because I think there's still I still think there can be consequences even if he's not speaking for the company. He's speaking for himself. That person runs a company. You know that their personal opinions impact their business decisions. So I still think it would have been just as,
right. But at least it would have been a little more like, just FYI, so, because I can't fault somebody for their personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he still believes that the millionaire tax is a good idea. All I want is for the media to then come and say, this guy that we played, oh my gosh, now he's changed his mind in terms of speaking out about it publicly. So,
right. And because of how many people he heard from, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Super chat that came in on E. Poindexter. Considering we've always had low transportation costs for fuel and refineries in Anacortes, it's shameful. Our own government puts the blame on Trump and not their own policies. Let's see here. On topless trans council member beating the recall effort, R.C. Zilla says Washington State is in hold my beer mode, trying to out California, California. Valerie, is this reality? Oh my God, what? How did this person become a city council member? Yeah, I don't know.
It's a very small town.
It's a very small town, but you would think, I mean, maybe just people don't vote. Paul, double legal standards is what that woman would be. If that was a woman, would be indecent. Yeah, double legal standards, if that was a woman, would be indecent. Like, if it was a woman to be topless when a man wouldn't, it wouldn't be indecent exposure for a man, but that's just always how it's been. Like, boobs okay, man boobs not. Boobs not okay, man boobs okay.
Yeah, although, I mean, even if you have a very obese man and they're, I don't know. People are usually like, hey, cover up.
Well, I mean, They're saying they're a woman, so let's go by their definition for legal purposes.
They literally had female implants implanted.
Yeah. Yeah. On the new Virginia governor being insane, Patty says, it's scary out there. The bus is my only means of transportation. That is scary because they have no interest in keeping public transportation safe. And think of all these violent crimes because you have crazy people who are dealing with a mental health crisis or whatever it is on the buses. Wild. Let's see. De Pluribus Unum, will end with you. If this keeps up, vigilante justice will become popular. Yeah, if you're not getting justice from anyone else, you might make justice for yourself.
All right, chaos.
Nicole, thank you. Yeah. Before we get to our closing sanity check from Bill Clinton, I don't think we've ever played a clip from Bill Clinton on the show, so this will be a first. Could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Could what's happening in Iran impact your retirement portfolio? And if you're just wondering about some of these uncertainties out there in the market, get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwer Capital. So he can go over how they're focused on risk management, built around the fundamentals of value investing, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every single day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast. So search Know Your Risk podcast on YouTube, all other social media platforms, or go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, I guess we should play something from the Clinton depositions. I've been really enjoying watching the clips coming out of it. Of course, the Clintons being deposed on the, questioned on the Epstein situation, what they knew, what they didn't know. This was an interesting exchange with former President Bill Clinton on his flights on Epstein's plane.
What did happen, Mr. President?
I don't know. I mean, I've already told you this. I'll tell it again. I never saw anybody do anything wrong. I thought they were flight attendants.
Do flight attendants typically wear tank tops and jeans?
They don't all wear uniforms on private planes.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's good. I think that was Lauren Boebert. That's who it sounded like. Do they wear tank tops and jeans? I saw nothing. I thought they were flight attendants. It's really sad when you think about it. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And now that we're through the show, I can say, because I'll keep it together, thank you for your kind words about Mike and I's dog, Mackenzie. We lost her on Sunday night. I didn't mention it yesterday because I just needed to get through the show yesterday. But I saw your comments coming in the live stream and elsewhere, and I'm very grateful. And we had 16 wonderful years with her, sweetest dog on the planet, and it was just time to say goodbye. But that doesn't make it any easier. So I appreciate all your love and support, and I'll pass it along to Mike as well. So thank you very much, and we'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.